Hi, I'm Drew Mandel. 2020 has been a bad enough year. The only thing that could make it worse is a tragic accident involving a sharp blade and your sensitive area. Precautions are necessary to keep your nether regions safe, and our friends at Manscaped have an entire line of products to keep your sensitive areas tragedy-free. Take it from us at Illegal Curve. One circumcision is enough for a lifetime. Go to manscaped.com and get 20% off and free shipping with promo code ILLCURVE. That's manscaped.com, 20% off, free shipping with promo code ILLCURVE. That's manscaped.com, proud sponsor of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast,
on TSN1290.ca.
Marc Bergevin is a fashion trendsetter, but who knew he was going to be a goaltending trendsetter with respect to moves when he acquired Jake Allen? And the dominoes fell. Ray just talked about Markstrom out in Vancouver, Holtby in. Markstrom into Calgary, Talbot out. And Matt Murray, the two-time Stanley Cup champion, goes to the Ottawa Senators. So when you look across the country and look at the goaltending, I mean, the bar has been set with Vezina Trophy winner Connor Hellebuyck. Two Stanley Cup winners come into Ottawa and Vancouver, and the Calgary Flames made their goaltending significantly better.
TSN Director of Scouting Craig Button with his analysis of the goaltending carousel that has continued to spin yesterday in day one of free agency, and it's going to continue spinning today. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich, located in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Well, when you hear that noise, you know that that means a signing has been registered. That is the shofar signing here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have a signing to announce, Thomas Greiss.
Was Sean a sword blowing the shofar there?
I don't know. It sounded shofar so good.
There you go. That a nice pun there, Dave. That is the shofar sound. If you hear that, that means a signing has been announced. Thomas Greiss, another one of the UFA goaltenders. He goes from the New York Islanders to the Detroit Red Wings. It's a two-year deal for Greiss. It's worth $7.2 million in total, $3.6 million in an average annual value of the salary cap hit. So Detroit has their new number one goaltender in Thomas Greiss.
The only problem with that shofar, though, is it's not Rosh Hashanah, it's Sukkot right now.
Doesn't matter. You can still sound the shofar.
I actually thought it was like from Anchorman. I thought it was like Anchorman Assemble.
Yeah,
like,
news team Assemble. I deliberately didn't tell you guys we were doing that.
Yeah, I had no idea.
Just so I could see your reactions.
I had no idea what was going on.
Dave, you look just more puzzled than you could believe. Anyways, Greiss just announced he goes to Detroit for 2 years and $3.6 million a year. You know, Thomas Greiss is a goaltender who gets no respect, and all he does is put up good numbers, albeit in a very structured team with the New York Islanders. Mm-hmm. So you wonder how that's going to translate to a Detroit team that is lacking in structure and lacking in skill and lacking in a lot of things. But, you know, I still like the contract a lot more than some of the other goaltending contracts I saw earlier yesterday.
Yeah, apparently New Jersey was in on Thomas Greiss at one point, but then late yesterday, I think it was around 9 o'clock Central Time, they announced the Corey Crawford trade, which to me makes a lot of sense. But
not a trade, a signing.
Pardon me, a signing.
Crawford got 2 years, $3.9 million per season.
Right, which is perfectly fine. Like, that's the thing, guys. These two-year deals for goalies, these three-year deals for goalies make a lot of sense. If you're Jacob Markstrom, you know, coming off of a Vezina-like season with Vancouver, yeah, then you deserve 6x6. But when you're talking about Detroit, I mean, Jimmy Howard's not coming back, right?
Right.
So they had to replace Jimmy Howard, and this makes a lot of sense. And I agree with you. I think Thomas Greiss is underrated. He formed a really good tandem with Robin Lehner a couple of years ago in New York, and he was a good goalie for the Sabres for many years. So, you know, Greiss isn't necessarily a top 10 goalie, but he's a bona fide starter. And that's what they needed. They've got their starter. And I think the only contract to me that is probably, aside from Matt Murray, that really is a contract that I don't really get is Cam Talbot. because Cam Talbot, like, I'm not saying anything against him, but I just don't know if that's a serious upgrade over Devin Dubnyk.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then you have Billy Guerin coming out and saying, no, Alex Stalock is not the number one goalie. Stalock is the backup, and we're bringing in Cam Talbot to be our starter. I just don't know how good Talbot is anymore.
Wouldn't you trust Devin Dubnyk to bounce back after a bad year way more than you would Cam Talbot being your answer? Cam Talbot is a good enough goaltender that he'll get you into the playoffs, and maybe he squeaks in a winning of a round, probably not in a best-of-seven situation. But you know what your ceiling is with Cam Talbot as a goaltender. That contract blew me away. I thought that was a terrible contract yesterday. I tweeted about it, at ICDrew, no big deal. That was a terrible contract, 3 years, $3.66 million a year for Talbot. That one just blew me away as being a bad contract.
Right. It's probably more so the extra year. Like, I have less problems with it if it's a 1 or 2 year deal. Mm-hmm. And the reason that's significant is because if you're Minnesota, right, you've got Kakkonen.
That's right.
Right. And a lot of people thought that the Wild were going to go into next season with Stalock and Kakkonen. So if you've got Cam Talbot on the books, but you really want to bring Kakkonen in to play with Stalock, or, you know, if Stalock moves on, and you're paying a guy $3.6 million to be your backup, right? Because that's the guy in Minnesota that they kind of envision as one day being potentially a number one goalie.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make a lot of sense from that standpoint. And the rest of the goalie contracts, aside from Matt Murray, they make a lot of sense.
The Matt Murray one I saw, and I was walking my dog when I saw it, and I had to stop. I couldn't believe the numbers that I saw. Matt Murray, who was an RFA, not a UFA, who was an RFA, is making more money than Connor Hellebuck. And that's maybe says a lot about how reasonable that contract is for the Jets for Hellebuck. But Matt Murray lost his starting job to Tristan Jarry last year in Pittsburgh. You want to take a flyer on him and acquire him? That's fine. I thought they paid too much in getting him for a second round pick. But then to sign him to this absurd contract, and I know you have to reach the floor. But if Matt Murray's bad this year, or if he's bad for the next 2 years, you have this huge albatross of a contract on your books. And guess what? Newsflash, the Ottawa Senators, they're not a real deep pocket team when it comes to being able to willy-nilly spend money.
I think it's too much money, but I think Murray will be fine on Ottawa. Like, and you forget he's only 27 years old or 26 years old. So
why is his game going to bounce back? You tell me why his game is going to bounce back.
He's won two Stanley Cups. It's not like he's, you know, 35 years old and his career's over. I mean, right. I think Matt Murray's had injury problems that have affected him. I think, you know, mentally, you know, we talked about it. Like, going into the playoffs, we thought maybe Tristan Jarry would be the guy, and they gave it to Matt Murray. And I think, you know, that affected him. I think going from the number one goalie, he went through that with Marc-Andre Fleury, right? So he went through that where he kind of had to prove himself, and he won the Stanley Cups. And then Tristan Jarry, when Murray was injured, came in and he outplayed him. There's no doubt in anyone's mind that Tristan Jarry deserved that contract, and Matt Murray was now the second goalie. I'm just saying, and I'm not a goalie guru. So someone like Kevin Woodley would be the guy to ask about that, why Matt Murray, you know, is a guy who could bounce back.
But fortunately, he's coming up in 45 minutes time.
We'll ask him about that, but I mean, I think you have to factor in his age and his track record. It's not like you can just, you know, take 1 year and say, you know, this guy's never going to be good
again.
That's
what he is. Yeah. No, but I agree. I know I agree with you, Ezzy. Like, it's not impossible at his age for him to rebound. Now, the issue is on a team that's a young team that's going to be young and they're going to probably, you know, use a lot of their prospects, what will that do? You know, they've got some nice pieces, but it could mean that it next year could be another kind of, you know, difficult season for Murray and the Senators.
But that's what you need. Sorry to interrupt you, but that's what you need if you're Ottawa. Like, he's going to face a lot of rubber. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about that. But you moved on from Craig Anderson.
Yep.
And to me, like, you need a goalie like Matt Murray who's got something to prove on a young team. And now, I'm not saying that Matt Murray's going to be a Vezina finalist. That's not what I'm saying. But I think that nobody should doubt, really, you know, if he can be a number one goaltender in the NHL. I think he has that ability. I'm not saying he's going to be a top five goalie in the NHL. I'm just saying that I think, you know, you have to give him the respect winning those Stanley Cups. Like, he's got a pretty impressive resume for a 26-year-old.
And you know, the other thing also is that
a lot better than my resume for a 38-year-old.
I thought you were going to say your resume at 26.
Well, that resume at 26 can't be discussed on air.
There was a lot of holes in that one.
Yeah, but again, like I said, I think the other thing is, we, you know, it seemed like he lost his confidence with Pittsburgh. they lost the confidence in him, and maybe that kind of did him in. So, you know, sometimes a change in situation can be big for a player. You know what I mean? And working with a new goaltender coach, that may have a benefit. We don't know what kind of off-season training he's doing. So I agree with you, Drew. On the surface, it seems like a tremendous amount of money for what he was, you know, with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, to Ezzie's point, he's not that old. If you can get something out of him, and again, you know, with that young Senators group, we know they're not looking to win next year, the Stanley Cup, that is. They're looking to win, obviously. But this is a team that's on the grow. I mean, this is a team that their prospect pool, I mean, I think Belleville was like the number six team in the AHL last year. And a lot of that was with their prospects. And we saw them play the Moose a couple of times here in Winnipeg, and then the Moose went to Belleville. So it's one of those situations where you see they have a deep prospect pool. And obviously it got deeper with three first-round picks on Tuesday. So the Senators are a team that's trending upwards in terms of their talent pool. So maybe that's what they're counting on. Maybe that's what they're factoring in.
The Boston Bruins are next up. They just made a signing. They signed former Nashville Predators winger Craig Smith. It's a 3-year contract for Craig Smith. It's worth $3.1 million per season, $9.3 million in total for Craig Smith to go from the Central Division to the Atlantic Division. You know, we'll talk more about this signing later on when we get to the forward
group. Smith is finding out about his signing on our show.
Probably. I can't imagine that he doesn't know that before that. So Craig Smith, the latest signing to come down the pike, going from Nashville to Boston. When we come back, we talk about some of the defensemen that have been on the move. Torrey Krug headlines that list. He's gone from Boston to St. Louis. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Excited. I'm very overwhelmed. It's been a long day, but couldn't be more excited at the opportunity that I have here to join St. Louis, that locker room, a lot of great guys. Went to war with them about a year ago, but I just can't wait to get to work with them.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. This is the Bodog.net scoreboard, where we're going to look at the defensemen who were signed yesterday as part of free agency frenzy. That you heard from there was Torrey Krug, who goes from the Boston Bruins to the St. Louis Blues. He's going to join that Blues back end, which of course spells an end to Alex Pietrangelo's time as a member of the St. Louis Blues. You know, Krug came out and he said really the Boston Bruins didn't even make him an offer to remain with the team. So it seems pretty clear there's some bad blood, some dirty water under the bridge there between Krug and the Boston Bruins. But no worries for him. He gets 7 years, $45.5 million, $6.5 million to join the Blues. You know, if you were the Blues, would you rather have Krug? Or would you rather have had Pietrangelo, assuming you could have gotten it done for similar money to what Krug ended up getting?
There's no doubt in my mind you want Alex Pietrangelo. I mean, Alex Pietrangelo is a better defenseman. Torrey Krug is an excellent offensive defenseman. But when you're talking about a straight-up comparison between Pietrangelo and Krug, I mean, I'm taking Pietrangelo all day long, and, you know, the advanced stats back that up. But Torrey Krug is a great signing for St. Louis, and I thought that tweet was hilarious. Who was
Robert
it?
Thomas.
Robert Thomas put it out there, and he said, you know, did we just become best friends because of that hit Torrey Krug laid on him? But it is pretty funny, guys, that just a couple years ago, the Blues and the Bruins, you know, were facing off in the Stanley Cup Final, and now, you know, the Blues have Torrey Krug. I can't speak for you guys, but I was certainly surprised by that because it looked like there was a small chance that Pietrangelo might stay in St. Louis. And, you know, I always like to kind of almost, you know, think a step ahead, and I wonder, like, what does this mean for Vince Dunn? Mm-hmm. And he was a guy, you know, he's a left side guy that I was thinking, like, could the Jets and Chevy maybe, you know, swoop in there and get a guy like Vince Dunn, because he's a very underrated defenseman. I really like Colton Parayko. Justin Falk, you know, I don't love that contract, but he's fine if he's in your top four. But, you know, you've got Torrey Krug there. I mean, it's a bit of a shifting of a guard, right, Dave? Because Jay Bouwmeester, you know, he doesn't factor in. I don't think he's officially announced his retirement.
No.
But I don't think Bouwmeester factors in there. So really, you know, the defense is moving from, you know, the old guard of Pietrangelo and Bouwmeester to, you know, Colton Parayko, Torrey Krug, Vince Dunn, assuming they get him done. But I think that's a really good signing. And to me, it shows you that the St. Louis Blues are serious about remaining Stanley Cup contenders, or at the very least, you know, remaining a threat in the Western Conference. Because, Drew, if you lose Alex Pietrangelo and you don't replace him, I mean, Vince Dunn is not Alex Pietrangelo. He's a good defenseman. But Pietrangelo, to me, and again, my opinion doesn't really mean anything, unless you're a fan of the show, I guess. But, I mean, to me, Pietrangelo is a top 10 D in the league.
Yeah, but you look at the Blues defense, and you know, it's probably not as good as it was last year, but it's not that far off from where it was last year. So you like the Krug signing in that sense. I mean, you know, for me, the Boston defense to me is what's just a big question mark at this point in time. Without Krug there, that defense, you know, Chara's, you know, certainly not getting any younger. That's for sure. I mean, Charlie McAvoy is a good player. Brandon Carlo's nice, but that defense leaves a lot to be desired from my perspective. So you wonder if there's another shoe to drop when it comes to the Bruins D after losing Krug and not even really making him an offer to try and retain him.
Yeah, it only made sense to me because Charlie McAvoy is a guy that I think has 1 year left on his deal or 2 years left on his deal.
McAvoy's got 2 years left.
There you go. 2 years left on his deal, and he's going to get a raise. So maybe you're starting to look ahead into the future and projecting your salary cap space. And we know that these GMs do that, right, guys? Like, they're not just thinking of next season. Yeah. They're thinking about 2-3 years down the road, right? So that was the only thing that I could think of is they're thinking, like, oh, we're going to have to pay Krug $6.5 million to $7 million. But we're going to end up having to pay, you know, McAvoy the same amount of money.
And Brandon Carlo
as well, right? And so Chara's a guy that, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he comes back for one more year. I can't see him. Who knows, though? He keeps himself in really good shape. But I agree with you, Drew. I mean, you take Krug out of the equation. He's a guy that can really move the puck well. He's one of the top power play defensemen, you know, in the league. He's a guy that, you know, really can move the puck, and he's a really creative player. You know, not what you would call, you know, the best defensive defenseman, but absolutely. I think Boston is a team, you didn't hear a lot from Boston. Like, Boston, I don't even think they made any moves yesterday, or maybe they made one minor move.
Craig Smith just, you know, 20 minutes ago.
Sure, I forgot about Craig Smith, but, you know, Craig Smith is a guy that, you know, most likely third, fourth line.
I like Craig Smith on Boston.
But that's not going to move the needle, right?
No,
like, you're talking about the back end, and that has been the strength in goal and the back end for so many years. So, are the Bruins going to be a terrible team next year? No, absolutely not. When you've got Marchand, Pastrnak, and
Bergeron,
I mean, and many more good players. David Krejci still is a really good center.
DeBrusque.
I mean, we could go up and down the lineup. They're still a very good team, but that defense has taken a hit.
The other two defensemen have Calgary ties, Dave, and that was TJ Brody, ex of the Flames. Mm-hmm. He goes to the Leafs for $5 million per season for the next 4 years.
Yep.
And then Chris Tanev, who, of course, we know here in Winnipeg from his time with the Moose, he goes from Vancouver to Calgary for the next 4 years at $4.5 million per season. $18 million total there, which sort of certainly looks to me that it spells the end of Travis Hamonic's time in Calgary, as Tanev's going to sort of slot in on the right-hand side there where Hamonic used to play. Your thoughts on those sort of domino effect moves between the Flames and the Leafs?
Well, I mean, I like the Brody signing because I like TJ Brody. I think he's a really good player, as he's been, was kind of had TJ Brody as a potential for the Winnipeg Jets, as a potential target for the Winnipeg Jets. And I like TJ Brody's game, and you know, he's a fairly talented defenseman. I think that's a pretty good signing in Toronto. And the Tanev signing, I don't know. I mean, it seems like it's a lot of money. I mean, he's a warrior. Nobody's going to question his abilities and his toughness, if you will. But it just seems like a lot of money and a lot of term for a guy.
It's the 4 years that really is.
That's what I mean. So to me, and again, I don't know what the Flames' defensive prospects are, but I mean, it's kind of almost like a Winnipeg situation in Calgary, right? Where you're having a pretty big changing of the guard in that sort of, you're losing some of their core defensive defensemen and they're having to make moves. And I like what Calgary obviously did in goal, and they've solidified that for the near future, obviously, with the 6-year deal. But I don't love the Tanev signing.
It's if you go 2 years with Tanev,
sure.
Or if you even bring back Hamonic for 2 years at $4.5 million, it's the 4 years that leaves me a little bit sour taste in mm-hmm. my mouth there when it came to that signing. All the other defensive signings, I thought were reasonable for the most part. Jack Johnson, he's got all the warts, but he's only getting $1.1 million for the next year. No big deal. Justin Schultz, it's $4 million a season. Maybe that's a little high, but it's only 2 years. So it doesn't really, it's not going to, be a terrible albatross on your books. He went to Washington. Radko Gudas, big physical. I think he's already been suspended for the upcoming season. he goes to Florida for $2.5 million a year. He's going to certainly make them harder to play against.
Yep.
Everything else when it came to the defense was what I would describe as reasonable and sort of like, okay, I can understand that.
Right. And you're talking about a lot of second and third pairing defensemen.
Yes.
You're not talking about top pairing guys.
No.
Just to go back to Calgary that, Dave was talking about, I agree that, Chris Tanev, I don't think, is the same defenseman as TJ Brody as far as, skill level goes.
Right.
Juuso Välimäki is maybe the one guy Dave drafted right before Christian Vesalainen mm-hmm. at the 2017 draft. He was injured last year. He's the one guy that I think, they expect to be in their top six, but certainly, without Brody and Hamonic, it's not as good as of a defense, right? But to me, Drew, the moves that stood out, and again, you're going to get on me here about the Devils, but, getting Ryan Murray for a fifth-round pick.
Yeah, if he can stay healthy.
Right? And the Panthers sneakily getting Marcus Nuttavaara.
Is that a word?
Sneakily?
Yeah. Sneaky?
We'll have to look it up.
Yeah. Not sure it's a real word.
But those types
I don't think it was worth interrupting.
What did the Panthers have to give up? A late draft pick to get Nuttavaara?
Not a lot.
I mean, Ryan Murray is a guy, even though he has the injury problems.
I think it was Cliff Poo, wasn't it?
Ryan Murray can move the puck.
That's right. It was
and
Cliff
when he's
Poo.
Healthy, he's probably a top four defenseman. So, good on the on Devils and the Blue Jackets, for getting these types of guys. And yeah, I agree with you. As far as these other moves, Justin Schultz, is he making maybe a little bit too much money? Sure, but he's a guy that, you can put out there probably on your second power play. He's an NHL defenseman, and that's what the Caps needed.
Before we go to break, Tyler Johnson, who had been placed on waivers yesterday, clears.
Oh.
Nobody claims Tyler Johnson, and he had a big contract.
Well, he's got 4 more years left at $5 million.
I'm surprised, though. I thought somebody, Detroit, Ottawa, teams like that need to just add some talent, and I know it's a lot of money.
For nothing.
For nothing.
Right.
No, so, nothing.
He's essentially a UFA, right?
Well, that's what you're going to have to, you're going to sign him to the contract if you wanted to claim him on waivers. Just goes to show, I think this is he's a victim of the cash crunch in the NHL. Tampa Bay is going to be stuck paying him accordingly. Presumably, they'll send him down to the minors. But
And that's why there's a lot of speculation that Alex Killorn's going to be traded.
Well, Tampa Bay is going to be fascinating to watch over the next week, 2 weeks, and see how they clear up that logjam of money. But Tyler Johnson clears waivers. When we come back, Lou Korak, who covers the St. Louis Blues, is going to join us. We'll talk about the offseason thus far in the free agency, the Torrey Krug signing by the Blues. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Hour number 3 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Pleased to be joined by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. We want to hear from you. You can reach us via Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can also reach us via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply, and our website with the absolute latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio that's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Lou Korak. Lou covers the St. Louis Blues for NHL.com. Lou, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Lou, obviously we have to start with the back end of the St. Louis Blues, where Alex Pietrangelo's time as a member of the Blues has come to an end. At least it certainly appears to be that way. And in his stead, the St. Louis Blues have signed Torrey Krug, ex of the Boston Bruins. Given the money that they gave to Krug, why couldn't a deal get done with Pietrangelo?
That's the million-dollar question, and nobody seems to have that answer right now. We spoke with Doug Armstrong last night, and even he didn't feel like he really had a specific reason why it couldn't get done. And I just think that, and I'll use his words because they tend to come up often whenever he's involved in negotiations with player contracts. It just didn't seem like that both sides were comfortably uncomfortable. And I just think that the Blues offered what they felt like was what they could substantially pay to an Alex Pietrangelo, which was more than what he was making before. And the Pietrangelo camp, and I don't want to put words into their mouths without knowing all the specifics, but we're apparently looking for something that they felt like was fair in their minds, and the two sides just couldn't come to an agreement. And when you hit that high noon mark where free agency opens, and you know that the player can basically walk without nothing, Doug Armstrong felt like he needed to find something that could jump in and sort of not exactly replace what an Alex Pietrangelo is going to give you, but find somebody that's suitable that can get in there and take up some of what you're probably going to be missing moving forward. And, you know, you can't be left empty-handed here and lose an Alex Pietrangelo and then watch others go someplace else, and then that really puts you in a bind and puts you in a hole and gives you an opportunity to have to replace exactly what Alex Pietrangelo gave you for the past 12 years. So it was a difficult situation, and, you know, I don't want to completely close the door on this, as crazy as it sounds, but yes, it's on life support right now, and probably the percentages say that he is going to play someplace else next year, but it certainly doesn't look good for the captain of the St. Louis Blues to be returning next year.
You know, Lou, you just mentioned that it doesn't look good that, you know, Pietrangelo is going to sign in St. Louis and stay with the only team that he's ever played for. But, you know, when you consider that, you know, they replaced him with Torrey Krug, and as you mentioned, you know, nobody's going to say that, you know, Torrey Krug 100% replaces everything that Alex Pietrangelo gave, because I mentioned it last segment, I think Pietrangelo is a top 10 defenseman in the NHL. How would you compare the defense, assuming that Pietrangelo doesn't come back next year? Is this defense good enough in your mind?
I think they're going to be better than what people are going to initially think here. And a lot of that's going to be, and, you know, let's hypothetically talk, you know, put into the equation here that Pietrangelo isn't going to be back. So let's just completely eliminate him from the equation here. That means you're going to have Colton Parayko step into a bigger role. You're going to have to give Justin Falk a more defined role on this team. And that's something, when people look back at Justin Falk's first year in St. Louis, I can tell you without a shadow of a doubt, he really had no defined role on this team last year. I mean, they had him playing all over the place and probably in roles that he hasn't played in the past with Carolina. I mean, he was always looked at as a guy that was a power play quarterback, a number one pairing type defenseman that was playing upwards of 23, 24, 25 minutes a night. And, you know, last year in St. Louis was a career low for him, and minutes played was between 20 and 21 minutes. So, you know, it may not sound like much, but it makes a difference. So to me, right off the bat, those two guys are really going to have to step up their games, and Justin Falk's going to have to give more of a defined role here. And what Torrey Krug is probably going to bring you is some of that abrasiveness maybe that a Pietrangelo didn't give you. And I say that from a guy that's listed at, what, 5'9", 5'10", and you wouldn't expect that. But that's how he plays, and he certainly brings that added element of a power play quarterback that you're probably not going to miss terribly too much with the absence of a Pietrangelo. It's just going to come from the left-hand side. I mean, and I understand he played in Boston, and that was and it continues to be a terrific power play. You know, he's going to be able to put up points when you're out there with Pastrnak and Marchand and Bergeron all the time. But I think that he's going to be able to help out in that element here. But needless to say, there's just, you know, certain intangibles that Alex Pietrangelo brings to the table. And, you know, you say that, you know, he's a top five defenseman or top 10 defenseman. In my eyes, I think he's a top five guy. So that's why this is really a tough blow for the Blues to swallow, and one that I feel like, you know, I can certainly understand the justification of going out and getting an impact player like a Torrey Krug, because it's just really tough to sit back and wonder which way the Pietrangelo camp was going to go, knowing that other assets out on the market could go someplace else, and it's not going to leave you with much to pick from then.
You know, Lou, with free agency in full throttle, it makes it feel like the NHL virtual draft was a lifetime ago, and of course it was only a few days ago. The Blues, with the 26th overall pick, took Jake Neighbors, which Elite Prospects called him a sturdier than a refrigerator. He's a brick wall. Overall, in addition to the first-round pick, how did you feel the Blues did with their drafting this couple days ago?
You know, I was a little surprised that that's the route that they went. There were a couple of different guys that were out there on the board that maybe I thought that they would look at, maybe somebody more of a polished center iceman. But, you know, and I even asked Doug Armstrong that a couple of nights ago, was, you know, an area of a guy that plays more of a wing position, a guy that's going to be in on the forecheck and be that type of a Craig Berube player, something that they were specifically looking for? Or, you know, when you pick at number 26, are you basically just looking for the best player available? And they felt like that Jake Neighbors was, in their eyes, the best player available, and that's what you're looking at. It's not necessarily by position per se. It's just this is a kid that they feel like fit their style of play, one that they feel like that they can grow into that role, and somebody that they liked playing in Edmonton. And I got a couple of different messages telling me that the Blues drafted themselves a very good hockey player. So, you know, are we going to see him anytime soon? I doubt it, but you never know in these situations. A kid can come into camp and just knock the socks off the coaching staff, but chances are, with the Blues, historically, they've tended to be very patient with their draft picks, and this is one that I don't see changing anytime soon, and it's probably for the best. You know, you get him to add on a few pounds, you get him to be more of an NHL-ready, give him more of an NHL type of a body when he comes into the league, but it's just somebody that I'm sure that the St. Louis Blues and their fans will see, you know, anywhere from 2, 3, 4 years down the line here.
Luke Korak is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Lou is a correspondent for NHL.com. He covers the St. Louis Blues. Lou, you look at the left side of the Blues defense, and there's an RFA there named Vince Dunn. The Blues are a team that is currently over the salary cap, but presumably they'll use Vladimir Tarasenko and put him on LTIR after he underwent yet another surgery in the offseason. Is that the plan? Is that the way that they're going to be able to keep Dunn in the fold, and that if he signs or when he signs, what do you expect that contract to look like?
That's an interesting one. And you can also throw Alexander Steen into that mold as somebody that may have to be used as an LTIR. Doug Armstrong mentioned last night that, and we don't know specifically what the injury was that hampered him there at the end when they were inside the bubble, just hasn't gotten better right now. And it didn't sound like a positive outlook. You know, obviously we don't know when we're going to be playing hockey here again, so things can change as far as that goes. But those are two players with Steen and Tarasenko mentioned as possibilities. So there is that potential that the Blues wouldn't have to make any corresponding moves in order to fit some of these, a couple of these RFAs, specifically, like you said, Vince Dunn, under the cap. And that's going to be an interesting one moving forward here, because I don't necessarily feel like Vince Dunn had as good a season as he had in the previous year, and specifically more after the team came back from the bubble. I just think that the time that he missed during the abbreviated training camp that the teams had really, really hurt him, and his play inside the bubble, I think, reflected that. And, you know, I think he's a better hockey player than what was shown during that time. But then again, you've got a player now that doesn't have arbitration rights, so this is one that could get a little quirky. You never know, but I think there's an understanding there that, you know, with the times the way they are, and you saw with a lot of the contracts that were given out on the first day of free agency yesterday, this is going to be a really tough market to try to get into, including restricted free agents. And, you know, Torrey Krug was the exception to the norm, as was Jacob Markstrom, who got himself $6 million AAV contract, but Matt Murray got one himself at 6.25. But, you know, you didn't see a lot of those fives and sixes and $7 million contracts yesterday. And I think that's going to be the case here with a lot of these restricted free agents moving forward. You could see Vince Dunn maybe sign one of those smaller type, 2-year type of a deal and play that out. Kind of the Blues tend to do that quite a bit with one of those prove it type of contracts. They did it with Jordan Binnington last year, and he's moving into the last year of his contract. So we could see something like that. And it might be able to establish the market moving forward a little bit, because we all know it's going to be a flat cap for a couple of years. So these are some really tricky times for not just organizations, but players as well.
Now, Lou, final question for you here, and you mentioned Jordan Binnington, and he obviously, you know, didn't have the best series against the Vancouver Canucks. It was a disappointing first-round loss. You know, many players on the Blues would probably say that, you know, they could have been better there. But I wanted to ask you, you know, we're sitting here in early October, not knowing when the season's going to start. We assume it's going to be sometime in January 2021. But what type of impact do you think that that loss to the Vancouver Canucks is going to have? Because, you know, we talk about Petrangelo probably signing with another team, you know, Vegas or whoever, and, you know, Doug Armstrong bringing in Torrey Krug, which to me, you know, is a move that you make because you want to remain a contender. So is that, you know, going to have any impact losing in the first round to the Vancouver Canucks? Or do you think this team is still just as much a Stanley Cup contender, you know, as other teams in the Central, even if Alex Petrangelo goes to another team?
Oh, that's going to remain to be seen. I mean, do I still think this team's going to be competitive? Yes. You know, when you take away, oh, in my eyes, what's a top five defenseman, boy, that's just a lot to replace. And, you know, Torrey Krug made a specific mention last night that, you know, he's not here to replace an Alex Petrangelo, and there's really nobody out there that can replace an Alex Petrangelo. So they're going to remain competitive. Whether they can be that Stanley Cup contender is a tough one to answer right now, because you are going to be missing Vladimir Tarasenko, and although this team last year performed admirably and very well without him, they're going to have to do this by committee, and I think these guys understand that. And Doug Armstrong mentioned it last night, don't necessarily think that the St. Louis Blues are done here. This roster, as you see it today, might not be the same tonight or tomorrow or sometime next week. We just don't know yet. So I still think that they may be looking for a forward here, one that could potentially jump into a top six role. And if you do that, you're going to have to, you know, do some maneuvering here, because this is a cap team. So as it sits right now, I think they're going to be competitive, but whether they can be that cup contender, I don't know. Are they going to be motivated? Absolutely, because the way they went out last year is not who this hockey team is.
Lou Korak covers the St. Louis Blues for NHL.com. Lou, appreciate your time and insight. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Hey, take care. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Lou. When we come back, we're going to talk about the free agent forwards that were signed yesterday. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Kyle, what excites you most about playing in Edmonton?
A few different things. The direction they're heading, having two of the best players in the world, being back in Canada. There's a lot to be excited about, and I'm really looking forward to getting started.
That's Kyle Turris, ex of the Nashville Predators. Boy, did that contract not work out. He signed a 2-year contract with the Edmonton Oilers, 2 years, $1.65 million per season, as he's trying to resuscitate his career in the Alberta capital.
Welcome. Resuscitate or resuscitate?
I said resuscitate.
I wasn't listening.
You weren't listening, and he can't hear. So we're off to a great start for this segment. Anyways, this segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, comedian Chris Gordon is performing. You can get your tickets at rumorscomedyclub.com. They're doing everything imaginable to keep you safe. They're socially distant. You got to wear your masks until you're sitting. They're taking all the necessary precautions. Being a responsible business owner, tickets available at rumorscomedyclub.com. So yesterday, the forward signings, again, none of the big names went off the board yesterday, really to speak of at all. The biggest contract was the one signed on Thursday by Josh Anderson in Montreal after he was acquired in the Max Domi deal. Josh Anderson signs a 7-year, $38.5 million contract. That's an average annual value of $5.5 million. Otherwise, yesterday, you know, there was one 3-year deal. Pardon me, there were a couple 3-year deals. Zemgus Girgensons gets $2.2 million to stay in Buffalo. Derek Grant gets $1.5 million to go from Philadelphia to Anaheim. You know, the Craig Smith one that we mentioned earlier today. And then before we got on air this morning in Colorado, Andre Burakovsky is going to stay in Colorado. It's 2 years. It's $9.8 million, $4.9 million per season. You know, very reasonable across the board. It'll be interesting to see what Taylor Hall eventually signs for, because he's the big fish when it comes to the forwards that are still available.
Yeah, and it seems to make sense that, you know, Hall's going to get a 2 or 3 year deal as opposed to
you don't think he's going to get more than 3 years?
Well, if you're Colorado and you have the firepower that they have, I don't know if why you would be giving, you know, Taylor Hall a 5-year deal at his age, but you know, we could see what happens. But I think there is a good chance that it's a shorter-term deal. And I don't know, obviously, if it's 2 or 3 years, but I would be shocked at this point if it's 6 or 7.
They were talking about that on the TSN broadcast yesterday, doing very similar to what Solani and Correa did back in the day when they signed their short-term big-dollar contracts with, I guess it was Colorado, when they both went there. It didn't work out, but, you know, nonetheless, they did sign those deals. Or the Marian Hossa style when he went to Detroit for the big money to win the cup.
And I think Columbus, you know, with their cap space, you know, getting rid of, you know, Ryan Murray, they didn't get rid of him. They traded him, but, you know, trading Marcus Nedovara,
they cleared up a lot of room.
Yeah, so Taylor Hall could go there. The Rangers have a lot of cap space. I mean, Hall, I think, you know, probably has 3 or 4 teams after him. I don't think there are, you know, 10 teams after him because of the cap implications, Dave. But, you know, just going back to that Josh Anderson for Max Domi trade.
Yeah.
You know, that was a really interesting trade. I like that one because it was a pure hockey trade. I think there was a draft pick involved as well. But for the most part, it was a pure one-for-one, right?
An RFA for an RFA, and they both signed contracts.
Right.
Domi signs in Columbus. He gets 2 years, $10.6 million, $5.3 per season. The Habs elect to go 7 years, basically full max with Anderson.
Yeah, and I don't know if you guys saw Arpin Basu's article for The Athletic, but, you know, he talked quite a bit. The main theme of his article was that back in 2016, Mark Bergevin really wanted Milan Lucic, right?
And obviously, be careful what you wish for.
Well, and the contract was why that, you know, it looks so bad in hindsight. Peter Chiarelli giving him, you know, what was it, $6 million AAV. But, you know, when you're talking about Anderson, you're talking about a younger player. Mm-hmm. We all know that a couple of years ago, everybody can look on HockeyDB. A couple of years ago, he had 27 goals for the Blue Jackets. Last year, he had big-time shoulder injuries. So he wasn't able to play a full season, wasn't able to play in the playoffs. But Anderson, I think, is a guy, because he's a power forward, Dave, and he's got all those attributes, plus he can score 25-plus goals for you. You know, he's a guy that, you know, can play in a lot of different situations. It makes sense for Montreal. I mean, Montreal's got a lot of skilled forwards. They needed a big body, but he can also score. He's not one-dimensional, right? Like, Josh Anderson is a good hockey player. So, you know, did maybe, you know, Bergevin give him a little bit too much money? Sure. But it was interesting the way he structured the contract. You know, it's $6.5 million or $5.5 million, I forget, AAV. But the amount he actually gets towards the end of the contract is less money. He makes more of the contract, in the early part of the contract. So,
which we're not seeing a lot of.
No, most of them are
back-ending
it. Yeah, because of the uncertainty with revenue and probably the lack of revenue this year.
Just thought it was an interesting trade because Max Domi, you know, gets a fresh start. He obviously fell out of favor there. And Anderson's a good deal, so a good player. And, you know, the deal, even if it's, you know, a little bit too much money, who cares? It's not like, you know, you're signing a guy who's 31 years old. You know, he's 27. He's, you know, quote-unquote in the, you know, the prime or towards the end of the prime of his career. So, yeah. I didn't think, Drew, any of the, you know, contracts were too egregious. I mean, Burakovsky, you know, maybe a little bit more money than I thought. But Burakovsky's a really good player who had his breakout season last year.
And, again, only 2 years. So, you're, you know, if he struggles, well, you're almost at the end of the contract. Anyways,
he had a lot of chemistry with Kadri.
Well, and it's just, you know, the impression, though, really, if you think about it, is just the fact that there were only 80 deals done. I'm saying this to Ezzy off air. Like, the fact is there were 80 deals done on day one of free agency. Last year was 130. And you look at the guys who are still available. Mike Hoffman, Mm-hmm. Tyler Toffoli, Anthony Duclair. Anthony Duclair is a very interesting player.
Evgeny Dadonov.
Yeah. Evgeny Dadonov, yeah.
How do the Senators not come to an agreement with Duclair, given their lack of talent, given the success he had?
And the fact that he was negotiating on his own behalf.
It's a good player to work with the younger players, right? Like, at this point in his career, Duclair's a veteran, you know, 25 years old. I thought that they would sign him for sure.
Well, you can sign him to...
23 goals in 66 games last year.
It doesn't make any sense.
That one was shocking.
Yeah. That they didn't even qualify him.
Yeah, that one made no sense.
Became UFA. I'm like, how does that work? I mean, I don't know what the Ottawa was doing, but I don't know what Ottawa was doing. Might have been the motto of the NHL for the last number of years.
You wouldn't be the first person to utter that statement.
I certainly wouldn't be. When we come back, we're going to talk about what Vancouver's doing. We'll talk about some goaltending as well. Kevin Woodley, who covers the Canucks as their correspondent for NHL.com, also works for In Goal Magazine, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number three. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us via text message. Send your text to 129090. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
He does work for In Goal Magazine. He's the Vancouver Canucks correspondent for NHL.com. He's a good friend of our program. Kevin Woodley joins us now. Kevin, good morning. Happy Thanksgiving weekend to you. How are you doing?
I'm good. Like, the goalie carousel in my head is spinning, but catching up now with some of the moves this morning.
Yes, absolutely. It was a crazy day for goaltenders yesterday in the NHL. We obviously want to start on the left coast because their goaltending carousel was active, to put it mildly. They signed Braden Holtby to that 2-year contract, which spells an end to Markstrom's time in Vancouver, who he eventually gets the big money deal to go join the Calgary Flames. You know, after the Canucks carousel stopped spinning, what were your thoughts on the Canucks goaltending situation going forward?
Well, it's kind of one of those things where you understand not wanting to go to that length of contract, go to that term of contract, especially with some of the big deals they have coming up for their young players starting next season and the cap crunch they've created, you know, to be honest, by themselves, by overpaying for you know, a number of bottom six guys when you think of Beagle and Roussel and Sutter and Michael Ferland.
Did we just lose
and
Kevin?
How that's impacted.
I think we may have just
cap.
Dropped the call with Kevin there, so we'll try and get him. Oh, there you go. You're back, Kevin?
Yeah, no, never left. I guess I just need to not move as much. I was just going to say they put themselves in a bad position in terms of their cap. You understand them not wanting to take any risks, both in terms of thinking they have Thatcher Demko there and not wanting to commit themselves to Markstrom long term. Both in terms of financially and in terms of, you know, what it means. Frankly, I'm not into term on goaltenders. I know they may take away my goalie union card on that one. But that would be the one thing I would avoid for the most part.
Looks like we may have lost Kevin again. So we're going to try and get Kevin.
Oh, nope.
Kevin, you're cutting in and out. So we're going to call you back and see if we can get you in on a better connection right now. And so our producer, Sean, will give you a call back in a second. But, you know, I think what Kevin was saying is that he understands why when you have Thatcher Demko, you know, and he's your quote-unquote your goaltender of the future, you don't then go and spend big money on keeping Markstrom in the fold, given what Calgary paid him. I understand the move from Calgary's perspective. They've desperately needed a number one goaltender since Mika Kiprusov was good back in, oh, gosh, that's a long time ago now. But, you know, from Vancouver's perspective, you know, I don't love the money they paid Braden Holtby, you know, over $4 million a year, but it's only 2 years, so I can understand it, Dave.
Well, I mean, and again, you saw what you got with Demko in the playoffs.
When he came in after Markstrom.
There's always that question mark. I mean, we talk about it here in Winnipeg with Eric Comrie, right? Like, could he stand in and become, a NHL-caliber goaltender? And to me, there's still a big question mark because he hasn't been given an opportunity. But with Demko, there was always that question mark. He was in the AHL. He was looking good. Finally, you see him at the NHL level. He looked really good for the Canucks. Mm-hmm. And so they felt confident in allowing their goaltender of the future to take that next step.
And and Holtby plays the same role that Steve Mason played in Winnipeg when they signed him to that 2-year deal a number of years ago, where if Demko comes in and he outplays Holtby and he becomes the clear cut number one, well, that's a good price to pay. You've got the insurance that Holtby provides, mm-hmm. but if that happens, so be it, and you're willing to survive with that.
Right, and this whole idea of clear cut number one, number two, it doesn't apply to every single team. Like here in Winnipeg, Hellebuck is a clear cut number one. In Tampa Bay, Vasilevsky is a clear-cut number one. Certain teams have that. But, Braden Holtby is coming off, a couple of years ago winning the Stanley Cup. He's a vet. Did he win the Vezina Trophy or was he a finalist? I forget. But the point is, Holtby is coming in and he's getting paid to play a lot of games. Whether you call that number one or number two, Thatcher Demko's never been a clear-cut number one goaltender, right?
So you insulate him.
Right, exactly. That's the point here. Like, that's why, it makes a lot of sense for Vancouver to go out and sign Holtby to 2 years, because you can't necessarily pencil in, Thatcher Demko to play 70% of your games next year.
I think we have Kevin back on the line. Kevin, are you there now? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I am. Sorry, guys. I should have given your my home number in the first place. That's I actually only keep a landline for that exact reason, to be able to do radio in my home office. So apologies for that. Let's see if, like a good starting goaltender, I can bounce back from a bad opening goal and not be rattled the rest of this conversation.
That seems very reasonable of you, Kevin, and no need to apologize at all. So we were talking about the Holtby signing. I mean, here in Winnipeg, we almost use it as the comparison when the Jets signed Steve Mason a couple years ago. Connor Hellebuck, Mason insulated Connor Hellebuck. Hellebuck ended up running away with the job, the starting goaltender job, and we know where that ended up. And I'm sure the Canucks, if Demko ends up doing the same impression that Hellebuck did, they'll be fine with paying Holtby the amount of money that they're paying him.
Yeah, no, it's exactly like that. Listen, as much as I understand the Canucks not wanting to do the deal that Calgary did with Markstrom, they just lost their two-time MVP. This is a guy who statistically, when I look at the numbers, ClearSight Analytics gives me a look under the hood to some of their proprietary numbers that a lot of teams use in the NHL. And Markstrom led the league over the past two seasons combined in terms of goals saved. When you weigh shot quality the way they do, nobody saved their team more goals than Markstrom. So this is a blow for the Canucks and a win for Calgary. When I plug Markstrom into Calgary's system, and you actually can do that at ClearSight, take goalie A and plug him into Team X, and he saved them like 18 goals last season, which is about a little less than what he saved the Canucks. So good move for Calgary. Vancouver, this is a blow, especially for a team that also lost Chris Tanev on the back end and doesn't have money to really replace him. But in terms of sort of stemming the tide, stopping the bleeding, Holtby's a nice patch. And I know a lot of people are going to look at it and see the 897 last year, the worst save percentage of his career. What they don't see is the expected save percentage that I've got in front of me from ClearSight Analytics, 879, lowest in the National Hockey League among starters. Washington was not good defensively, that is putting it kindly. So for Holtby, he'll be used to a tough environment, which is what he's going to face here unless they tighten things up. And I think the combination of things in terms of change of environment and his ability to sort of manage a bad defensive environment, I think he'll be fine here. It's still going to be a net loss. Like, Markstrom was that good. But I think both in terms of being able to work with Thatcher Demko and give them good starts, he was the best option outside Marc-Andre Fleury when I ran the numbers that the Canucks could look at. Like, he was better than some of the other names, in terms of fitting here. Grice, Crawford, a lot of those options. Holtby was the best one. They got the best one. Money was a little high. Terms reasonable. Gives them somebody they can expose to Seattle in the expansion draft instead of Thatcher Demko. And, at the end of the day, you need two guys. You're not getting through next season, and everybody's talked about this, without two guys that can play, and they've got that.
Kevin, I wanted to ask you about Matt Murray, because earlier in the show we were going over that goalie carousel that you referenced, and in my opinion, Matt Murray is a guy that I think is a great fit for Ottawa. Take the contract out, because I realize that this time of year, even though it's usually July, everybody is focused on AAV, and a guy gets $4.2 million or $3.7 million or whatever. But taking that out of the equation, Drew was asking us why we think Matt Murray can bounce back, and what I mentioned was You know, he's only 26 years old, and last time I checked, he still got two Stanley Cups on his resume. But, you know, aside from playing community center hockey in net, I'm not at all a goaltending expert, and that's why we wanted to ask you. So, in your opinion, why do you think, you know, Matt Murray, you know, based on, like you said, he also had a sub-900 save percentage last year. Why do you think he's a good bounce-back candidate for Ottawa?
Well, okay, so like, let's separate the contract from why I think Matt Murray can be good moving forward, because it's kind of hard to defend the contract, no? Like, 6.25, you know, Markstrom was the highest-end contract. Like, he sort of broke the mold, and he's coming off two great seasons. Yes, no Stanley Cups, but, you know, body, you know, and a little older, but still, like, you can't defend the contract. That's Ottawa tax. That's, you're going to play behind a young, potentially bad team for a couple of years tax, and they paid it. In terms of why he can bounce back, because he's changing the way he's playing. Listen, Matt Murray had success with the Pittsburgh Penguins playing a stance and a style that was very locked in low and wide. And when you think of him, you think of him sort of like with his, you know, a wide stance. Think of like the skate spread out below him, sort of locked in. Got away with it in Pittsburgh. Well, actually, a lot of goalies were getting it away with it at that time, but in Pittsburgh particularly because they were very good. They won two Stanley Cups essentially doing this. Preventing lateral chances in front of their goaltender and creating them at the other end. After they won their two, Washington did the same thing. They won a Stanley Cup by focusing on creating lateral offense, east-west offense. Matter of fact, their goalie coach used the ClearSight analytics model to show why they needed to do this, and that was part of having an influence on how they attacked. Defended trying to take away the same things. Won a Stanley Cup. So now here we are 3-4 years later, and every team is emulating that. This is why save percentage is going down. This is why a lot of the expected goal models using public numbers are increasingly off, I believe, because increasingly more teams are trying to attack this way, to generate offense this way. And Matt Murray was stuck playing a way that doesn't necessarily work against that type of attack behind a Penguins team that wasn't nearly as good at preventing it. And this isn't, like, I'm not blaming him. This is just the things that worked don't work as well now for him. And so he's had to make some adjustments. And I thought I saw it in his game halfway through last season. He started to narrow up at times. But this is not a snap-your-fingers change. It's going to take some time. And I think Ottawa understands that that's one of the changes they want to make there. And if the reasons I believe he can make it are because he's already attempting to start it, and he did it on his own volition. Like, he initiated these changes. They didn't have to be forced upon him. And you guys in Winnipeg, well, if everyone's like, well, how do we know this is going to work? I'll give you one name, Adam Francilia. That's who Matt Murray sought out and started working. You guys know in Winnipeg just how big an impact he had on Connor Hellebuck in one offseason heading into that first Vezina finalist campaign. Well, that's who Matt Murray's working with, and those are the things that Matt Murray is working on, along with other biomechanical changes that should help him overcome, you know, the deficiency. And deficiencies isn't even a fair word. It was just a style and a stance that wasn't going to work as the game changed in front of him. So now he's making that adjustment. All the other things that made Matt Murray so good, and let's not forget, we're not that far removed from comparisons to Ken Dryden. You know, like, that's how good this kid was out of the gate. All the other things are still there. The mental strength he showed under pressure, you know, the other elements of his game that did work, they're all still there. He just needs to change his foundation and his stance and his setup. I think he's got the right guy to help him do it. And the fact that after two cups he's willing to initiate that change on his own tells you that he's not just running around going, I won two cups, I don't need to change a thing. And let me tell you, there are guys with a lot less pedigree than Matt Murray that are more resistant to change that's required than he is. So, you know, don't love the contract. I think it's hard to defend, but understand it in terms of getting people to play there and commit long term. But in terms of his ability to turn it around, like I said, that process has already started. Maybe there will be some growing pains, like we saw with Connor Hellebuck. You know, I remember getting calls from Winnipeg radio stations. Is Wade Flaherty the guy for the job? You know, when Hellebuck was going through some ups and downs, and it's like, no, like, he's making these changes because he sees what's on the other side once he's comfortable with them. But you have to live with the growing pains during the adjustment period. Well, Hellebuck came out on the other side, and nobody's questioning him or Wade Flaherty now, and I think you're going to see the same thing with Matt Murray. It just may take you know, a little bit of time before you see it come completely to a fruition, especially behind a porous defensive team.
Kevin Woodley is with In Goal Magazine. He's a Vancouver Canucks correspondent for NHL.com. Kevin, appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. Have a great Thanksgiving weekend. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Yeah, my apologies for the phone line early, guys.
Nothing to apologize for, Kevin. Take care.
Thanks, Kev.
When we come back, one final segment on this Saturday morning, we'll look at some of the more of the signings around the league and preview what's to come, because it's still going to be a busy time in the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment Saturday morning. Welcome back to what has been a very busy Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. Couple of other signings that appear to be coming down the pike, not yet official. Darren Dreger, TSN Hockey Insider, just tweeting, it's looking like the Oilers and Tyson Barry are closing in on a one-year agreement. It's being finalized, likely just shy of $4 million for the defenseman to join the Oilers' back end. You know, makes a lot of sense. The Oilers are going to be without Klefbom. He's injured. Clearly the Oilers are just abandoning any notion of playing defense this year, given Barry's shortcomings on the defensive side of the game and given that Mikko Koskinen is currently their only goaltender under contract. So 1980s-style hockey going to be the theme of the season whenever that begins in Edmonton, which, you know, will be entertaining if nothing else, because they're quickly running out of goaltending options. And Barry certainly isn't known for his defensive prowess, like I mentioned.
No, and, you know, Corey Crawford made a lot of sense to me before he signed in New Jersey.
Sure.
That made a lot of sense for me as an option for the Oilers. Maybe you'd have to move some salary cap space around, but they clearly, you know, we're going after Tyson Barry, and yeah. You got to love that it's a one-year deal.
Yeah, doesn't, right? There's no such thing as a bad one-year deal.
And Barry is a great power play specialist, and you know he has defensive shortcomings, guys. We don't have to go down that road again. We've talked about that before. Everybody knows that. But you know, Kyle Turris, that contract's fine. Jesse Puljujärvi, to me, is the big one in terms of how impactful can he be, Dave, right? Like, I think we all expect him to be better than he was, you know, in his last stint with Edmonton, but you have to think
that...
Well,
he just had 2 goals and 1 assist playing over in Finland.
Well, and his numbers have been good in Finland, and you wonder, you know, how can you possibly not have success when you're playing with either Connor McDavid or Leon Draisaitl?
It's a good situation to come back into. It's a better organization now. There's more structure.
Well,
there's more stability.
He's got different, you know, different guys running the team.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. More, it's a better organization than when he left. And, and hopefully,
no, I think it's going to be very good for Jesse Puljujärvi. I think he's the kind of player who, you know, you kind of got a sense that he was just deserving. He's a little more mature now too.
Probably,
so I think that's going to be a benefit to him, and I think there's, to Ezzy's point, there's a lot of talent on that Oilers team offensively, and I think he'll be able to fit in that mold and he'll do well.
And Ken Holland is making all of these moves very close to the salary cap ceiling, right?
Yep.
Like, it's not like the Oilers are like the Rangers or the Senators or the Devils where they have all this cap space, so, you know, he's got to make these type of, you know, bargain moves, right? Well, Kyle Turris, you know, you pay him $1.5 million or whatever it was.
Yeah.
You 1. Know, 6, Tyson 5. Barry, $4 million, quite frankly, is less than I thought he would get.
Well, and just quickly, as Frank Saravalli just tweeted out, that Barry turned down more money elsewhere to join the Oilers, including a $6 million offer.
Well, that's leaving a sizable chunk of change.
It's pretty big.
Well,
that's pretty big.
But yeah, that's Ginsburg money you're leaving on the table there.
No, but you have to think that part of that is he's thinking, I'm passing the puck to Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl on the power play. He's probably going to be, you know, a 50 to 60 point defenseman easily on Edmonton.
He's probably betting on himself, thinking he has good numbers and everything else, and he'll cash in next year where
that's
there's
right.
probably more money, more, you know, revenue in general available in the NHL, and, you know, hopefully, maybe, God willing, the COVID crisis is a little bit beyond us at this point in time when free agency launches next year. That's it for this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to all of our guests back in hour number one, Ted Wyman, Michael Trakos, Lou Korak, and Kevin Woodley. In case you missed any of those interviews, in case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes, it's on Google Play, it's wherever you get your most popular podcasts. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us, let us know what you think of the program. You can also, of course, get it on TSN1290.ca and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big props to producer Sean Assor, doing a great job back in the studio. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. For Dave Manouk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.